Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show. My name is Adam Bayford and I know what it feels like to get quiffed on the ashes. And the man in the middle of popping a load of bubble wrap like his teacher asked for some reason is Tony Kerr.
It's great stuff, that. It's what people have come for, isn't it? It's just weaving in all the different narrative arcs of the ashes. That's the one I care about most. What is it? Quiffing?
Quiffed. Quiff.
I still don't really know what quiff is, to be honest. It's been advertised at me about 50 million times.
Well, the advert certainly doesn't explain what it is.
No.
Does it? It doesn't give you much clue. But
What was that, the social media platform that Agnew started?
Yeah. Kicker?
Kicker, that was it. It sounds like that to me.
It was about a week and a half where Agnew was trying to get everyone in the world off Twitter and onto Kicker, and then he gave up on that quite quickly.
Yeah.
Just quietly disappeared. For listeners who aren't sure what we're talking about, this is an ad for what I think is a betting company called Quiff. Literally every third advert on the BT coverage of the Ashes is this very bizarre one for Quiff.
Very nice, sultry voiceover, isn't it?
Mm. Oh, how are you, Tone?
Yeah, all right. It's taken us a little longer than expected to get round the table, but we've done it.
Well, it's been a really tough week, hasn't it? And I've been crying too much to do this.
You've just tried to pour a glass of water over my head.
Yeah.
Taking it in, what's the expression? An art imitates life or something.
Yeah.
Is that the expression?
Life imitates art, normally.
Something like that's the one.
That's normally what you'd say.
That's the one. That was the one I was looking for. It is Sunday evening. It's been a long weekend.
That's a good gag, that, Tone, although people don't know what you're talking about. But yes, I did just throw water everywhere. It's gone from bad to worse this week. I mean, first Adelaide, and now I've thrown water all over my sock.
I hate wet socks.
It's been a tough week.
Yeah, it has been.
Yeah.
Well, you're looking perky anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a few days on, isn't it? The dust has settled a little bit, and I'm feeling a bit less tired. Still pretty tired, but a bit less tired. Obviously, yeah, got up at 3 every day to watch the Adelaide Test, and by the end of it, having got up at 3 every day and then witnessed an England batting collapse on the final day, I was a bit sleep deprived and emotionally fragile is how I describe my state. So it's probably a good thing that we didn't record a pod straight away, because I'd have been struggling a bit. A few people have said, like a few people at work and that, like when I've said, they're like, oh, you're right, you look a bit sort of you look a bit tired. I'm like, yeah, well, been getting up at 3 o'clock every morning to watch the Ashes. And a few different people have gone, oh, that's really impressive, actually. I'm like, is it? I mean, I don't know. If only I could apply this level of dedication to something that actually matters, Tone.
Yeah.
I'd really be getting somewhere.
No, it's impressive. It's more, I mean, I didn't manage it. I did a few. And we'll come on to, you'll give us a blow-by-blow account, I'm sure, of the test. Certainly... Yeah, you've shown me up slightly. I've been watching as much as possible, but yeah, I didn't do every morning for that test.
Yeah, as much as, you've been watching all of the play between 10:45 and 11 after you've got up. So anyway, yeah, we're both pretty tired, both pretty emotionally fragile. So yeah, even now, I'm a little concerned about how this podcast is going to turn out. I mean, you already went full Kevin Keegan last week, so this week... Who knows what could happen? Either one of us could have a meltdown at any moment. Actually, I think you're feeling a bit worse for wear as well, aren't you, Tane? It's Sunday night. I think you're on the struggle bus this morning after last night.
Yeah, it was like a night out in Perth last night here in St. Petersport. Just went big.
Well, shall we get on with it, Tane?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the cricket. Once again, I've made the mistake of leaving my jumper on as we started to record, so I'm going to have to take this off. I've already taken my socks off because I poured water all over them. I don't know if I mentioned that. It's a Christmas jumper this week.
It is.
I've taken off my Christmas jumper to reveal a Christmas t-shirt. All right, so let's crack into it, Tony. We've got a lot to discuss tonight and not much time to discuss it if I'm ever going to get any sleep. So, yes, we have had, as we've alluded to, a test match in Adelaide this week. I don't know if anyone noticed, and it was a pretty remarkable test match as well. I can't imagine many people need me to recap this game, so I'll make it as brief as possible. I won't ask Alexa to do it this week. Heard from a few listeners, actually, who are quite impressed with Alexa, Alexa's recap of the game that I put on the pod last time.
Maybe we'll just record that next and pump that out, Zorin.
I mean, it's good. Like, from my point of view, it's good because it, you know, it makes a bit of a change because the main things that I use Alexa for are, one, as like an egg timer. It's just timing things when I'm cooking. And two, to ask how old various celebrities are. That's pretty much all I use Alexa for. It's when I'm watching TV. It's just, Alexa, how old is Jason Bateman? Jason Bateman is 48 years old. That's the only uses I found for Alexa.
Is this a sponsored section? is there a bit of Amazon money that I'm not seeing here? Because you're bringing up Alexa an awful lot.
Let's move on, shall we? All right, so yeah, a very, very brief recap of this test match. Australia were put into bat by Joe Root, and they made that decision look a bit foolish by racking up 442 for 8, declared an unbeaten 126 from Sean Marsh. England then were under pressure when they came into bat, and they didn't respond too well. Nobody made a 50 as they were bowled out for 227. Nathan Lyon continuing his strong starts this series with 4 wickets. But then it got interesting because Steve Smith opted not to enforce the follow-on, and England took advantage of that to force their way back into the match by bowling them out for 138. Jimmy Anderson took 5 for 43 and Chris Wakes 4 for 36 as Australia collapsed. And that set England a target of 354, which he always felt was going to be too many. That's a pretty stiff target in any situation, isn't it? But they did make a pretty strong start. They were 169 for 3 at one stage, and then they did lose David Milan late on day 4. But, you know, you felt that, what did they need? About 175, 176 on the final day with 6 wickets in hand. And there was a bit of hope there, and everyone got up at 3 in the morning to see what would happen. But it all fell apart very, very quickly. Josh Hazlewood getting rid of Wokes and Root in the first 3 overs. And it all ended quite quickly as England were finally bowled out for 233. Mitchell Starc finished with 5 wickets. And that gave Australia what was a pretty big win in the end by 120 runs. So, Tony, this was a good game of cricket. That's my first piece of analysis. Went one way then the other, didn't it? Fluctuating fortunes. England seemed to be heading for an absolutely crushing defeat, but they did drag themselves back into the match on what was a thrilling fourth day, only to fold like origami on the final day and still end up on the wrong end of a crushing defeat. So, what did you make of all this? Where are we in the series now? And how are you feeling about it?
It's pretty disappointing, isn't it? I think that's just the way to sum it up. I mean, I will make this case over the course of the next 45 minutes or so, depending on how long it takes me to get my words out. No, but, you know, I don't think it's not that England have been utterly desperate. There's been a couple of performances, individual performances, which have very much helped Australia get over the line. They are edging it in pretty much every area at the moment. But it's a shame that we're going to we're going to the third test and already England are pretty much down and out. All the optimism, the enthusiasm of about 2 weeks ago has already gone, which is...
I don't remember there being that much optimism, at least not on this podcast.
No, okay, optimism is the sort of blooming optimism a few weeks ago.
The excitement,
out of nothing,
I suppose. Exactly. We're excited about the series.
So that's pretty disappointing. You know, all the sort of nonsense off the field stuff is a real downer. Mm. I'm sure we'll talk about the Duckett stuff, even though, I mean, that is just, I don't know what to say about that. It seems so sort of lame as an incident.
Yeah, I haven't got that much to say about it. You say we'll come on to it. I don't know.
Well,
I
say come on to it, but I'm sure we'll mention it. We are mentioning it now.
Well, we're literally mentioning it now. So, there's not too much to say, I don't think. It's just one of those, like, you know, as a few people have pointed out, it's a bit bit odd that England have made so much about it when Trevor Bayliss's comment was like, the players have to understand that people will blow this sort of thing well out of proportion. As in, he was saying they shouldn't do this because people will blow it out of proportion.
Yeah.
He says, while blowing it massively out of proportion.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the whole thing though, that and the Bancroft thing, again, you know, something of nothing. I don't know. It just sort of speak to the kind of media hysteria of, you know, this day and age, isn't it? Of just something of nothing. And
well, I think this is why you're frustrated, isn't it? Because you know, you're saying, this is the case you're going to make. I think you've been frustrated with some of the media comment in the aftermath of this game.
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about reactionary stuff, don't we? And it's a test match series. Australia are edging it so far. England, you know, aren't a great side at all. Neither are Australia, really. And Australia would just, for whatever reason, are just slightly better at the moment. You know, they've had a couple of players stand up. Marsh with the innings, the match-winning innings in this series. Because if you look at the actual, the totals, and I know we're only four. Well, so England's totals, 302, 195, 227, 233. And, you know, it's not great. None of that. No England batsman has come out of it looking good so far. But then Australia, if you take out, or if you look past those two centuries, you know, there's not much difference between the contributions from everyone else in Australia's batting lineups, and the performances have been much of a muchness.
Well, no, but is that, in a sense, what is frustrating about it? No, go on.
No, so exactly. So,
no, if you want to interrupt me, Tim, that's fine.
What's frustrating is that, you know, and it, you know, it's you can't be like, oh, you know, what's wrong with everyone? You know, you can't engineer players who are going to score test match 150s in Ashes series. And just the fact that no England batsman has put their hand up yet is just annoying and frustrating, as you say.
Yes, and this is why, in a sense, it's like, you know, the idea that England have let themselves down or disgraced themselves is slightly odd, because nobody or not many sensible voices were expecting England to win this series. You know, we were far from the only people saying that ultimately the problem is going to be that England's batsmen aren't going to be good enough to handle Australia's bowling attack. And that's what's happened. And that, you know, that's where we are. And it's a strange leap to go from saying that that's probably what's going to happen to, when it does happen, saying, well, this is an absolute disgrace. Which I don't think many people are saying it's an absolute disgrace, but, you know, there is a feeling that England have underperformed, but it's in a way they're performing exactly as we expected them to.
Yeah.
I think you made a very similar point when they lost 4-0 in India last year, that, you know, people were saying this is embarrassing. Well, that's what people were expecting before the series would happen, pretty much. So,
yeah, and I mean, the one sort of caveat to that would be, I suppose, that, you know, there are still three games to go. There's ample opportunity for England to embarrass themselves further this winter.
I thought you were going to say for them to, you know,
to recover.
To recover, but no.
The way things are heading, you know, a 5-0 whitewash is probably the most likely outcome at this point, which is a...
That's a big call. I don't know if I'd say it's the most likely, but it's certainly not unlikely.
No.
And that would be, I didn't think that they would get whitewashed. And if they do get whitewashed, that would be disappointing. And yeah, I suppose, you know, having said that this is kind of what we expected, which it is, what I was getting at before and saying is, you know, this is sort of what's frustrating about it when you're talking about, well, if you look beyond those 200s from Australia, there are flaws there. You know, we've seen in this series, and particularly in the second half of this Adelaide test, that in some senses, Australia are there for the taking. You know, this isn't the greatest Australia side that we've ever seen. It's frustrating that, you know, we are in a position now where in that second half of the Adelaide test, England actually played really well. They bowled Australia out for 130. You know, it sort of feels like they've woken up and started playing cricket, but they've done it at a point where the match was already gone, and therefore the series is gone too, isn't it? It's that's what's frustrating, is that it suddenly looks like we might have quite a good series on our hands, but it's already over. And yeah, now we're looking at a stat that England have lost their last 7 tests in a row in Australia, 13 of the last 17. You know, I in a way, it's hard not to be at least a little bit disappointed as an England fan that record is so bad.
I think it's just such a shame, you know, when you just to arrive at the biggest series for, you know, for England cricket with not, you know, we've talked about unanswered questions. I've talked about unanswered questions all year, but, you know, arriving at the series and you know, just the issues being the same.
Mm. You mean the issues around selection?
Yeah, and just, yeah, not filling holes. And I think if there is a worry, it's kind of, you know, where are the good cricketers coming from at the moment?
Yeah.
Because there does seem to be a shortage.
That actually is keeping me awake at night in some ways, because, you know, I think England have played well in patches in this series, but to a large extent, the guys who've played well have been like Jimmy Anderson, Joe Root. The future doesn't look that great. I mean, as we've said many, many times, when was the last time that an English batsman came into the Test team and made a success of himself in the long run? Joe Root, 5 years ago. When was the time before that? Jonathan Trott, 8 years ago. Like, it's literally one batsman in the last 8 years has come in and been good in Test cricket. And then you look at the bowling attack and, you know, there's obviously sort of more reasons to be cheerful there, but that's largely because of Anderson and Broad, and they're not going to be around forever. You know, what is the future of the, you know, how good does the future look for the England team? It's, so even like in 2006, when they got whitewashed, it was desperately poor, but Alastair Cook scored some runs and Ian Bell scored some runs. And yeah, it was a feeling then that this has been a disaster, but that Australian team is coming to an end. And you did feel coming out of that series, England actually might be favourites to win the next one. Is that the case this time? I don't know. I don't know that you can say that.
No.
But having said that, in a sense, it would be a strange time to choose now as the moment to, you know, completely lose your rag with the England cricket team. As you say, with some of the reaction has been a bit strange, because they did in this game stage a tremendous fight back, and it was in vain in the end, but it was a fabulous effort. And from where they were in the first innings, you know, 200 plus behind, to have come into the final day with a genuine chance of winning, and, you know, got all those sort of hundreds of thousands of England fans out of bed at 3 a.m, you know, that was incredible. And they do deserve a heck of a lot of credit for that. But as I say, what's the disappointing thing then is that they've left it until now, you know, until it was too late to do that. Because, yeah, as I say, suddenly it looks like we could have a series on our hands, but it's already over. I mean, or is it already over? Do you think, you know, at 2-0 down, 3 to play, is the Ashes gone?
It feels gone. I mean, yeah, there is a lot of cricket left to be played. I think that, you know, walking into work the day, you know, people wanted a few things to say about the cricket. They were largely...
People were just high-fiving me, saying, well done for getting up at 3 in the morning. I'm so impressed.
But it's just that thing of people would be like, oh, yeah, England are awful. Yeah, they're dreadful, aren't they? They've always been terrible. It's like, well, they were the best side in the world not that long ago. It is a unique sort of, well, maybe it's not unique, I don't know, but, you know, the English sort of sporting mentality is one that remembers vividly the failures and just sort of glosses over and very readily forgets success.
Yes. Well, yeah, because obviously England beat South Africa in the summer, but people just wouldn't have noticed that.
No one.
When you were walking into work, people weren't talking about that.
Absolutely not.
But it's a bit of a strange, like, we're in a slightly unique situation with the England cricket team at the moment, I feel anyway, where it's kind of falling in the middle, where on the one hand, you know, if people say, oh, it's a disgrace, they've always been a disgrace, that's not true. But you've also got you've got some England cricket fans who think that this team is much better than it is. Or at least before this series thought that it was, you know, because we've talked about, even when England were beating South Africa, we talked about there were all these problems in the team and it's not a great team. It's sort of, it's falling in the middle where they're actually kind of average at the moment, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, when you actually look at this match, you know, Smith's decision not to enforce the follow-on, definitely, you know, he held the door open for England there and they you know, walked straight on past. Mm. So England got a little bit of help from Smith. You know, I can see why he did it, and in the end it was the right decision, wasn't it, because they won the match. So, but then when you look at just some of the things that happened, and this is sport, this is why we enjoy it, but, you know, Australia just got edged the key moments, you know, getting Milan right at the end of play on day 4. You know, it would have been slightly different mentality going into the final day. It was always going to be a tough task. I mean, I think I was definitely more optimistic than I had any right to be. Mm. But then that's just, you know, that's just human nature, isn't it? Because it was such a huge target, but it never felt, the target wise, out of reach. And then, you know, losing Wokes first, was it second ball? And then Root so quickly after that. And then, you know, the Wokes dismissal just set the tone, didn't it? It was like, it's sort of the pulled the rug under it, even though it was only Wokes. And then the nature of the decision was really annoying. Having woken up at 3:15 in the morning, I didn't think it was out. I don't know.
Well, he nicked off, didn't he? He was given out caught behind.
Yeah.
And it went upstairs, or Wokes reviewed it. There was nothing on hotspot. They went off a mark on Snicko,
which didn't look like it was at the same point as the ball passing the bat.
No, it was a very small mark, wasn't it? And it did look like it may have been just after the ball passed. But, he was given it. So I was very frustrated as well. But
I was annoyed. Whatever. A lot of people would probably say that was as out as you get.
I don't think that was out. And so at the time, I was absolutely furious. But when you look at how well Australia bowled that morning, can't imagine Wokes would have survived much longer, even if he'd been given not out there.
True. But, it's one of those things. If the first half an hour Wokes plays with a bit of freedom and cracks a couple of boundaries, and then suddenly the whole dynamic changes a bit, and when he goes, Australia's backs are up, they're ready to, they're rocking, rolling. I don't know, it was always going to be a tall order. It's a shame England didn't get closer. I think they probably should have got closer.
It was very disappointing on that final morning, wasn't it, having got up at three, having been very excited. As you said, it did feel like there was a chance. It felt like there's a possibility of that we were in for something historic, and then we weren't. But I think you still have to give England credit for the fight back, and also we should just enjoy the fact that it was a fantastic Test match. If whatever you think about that Smith decision, it certainly made for a better game. It was a great game. It ended fairly meekly on the final day, but such excitement. Certainly that fourth day, the as a single day of Test cricket, that's one of the best days of the last few years, for sure.
And there were some great moments in the match. Overton getting Smith in the first innings, that was really exciting. And then, Marsh, just fair play to him, it was a terrific knock. And all in all, that's again like the first Test, that innings has won his team the match.
And he deserves so much credit, because as we talked about, his selection was very controversial. It's the kind of innings that I think certainly I didn't think he could play, on the biggest stage under pressure. And I'm not sure many Australian fans thought he could play either. So, yeah, he deserves a lot of credit. As you say, some amazing moments. And you mentioned Cummins getting Milan right at the end of day four. And,
Oh, it's a terrific delivery, wasn't it?
And it's sort of a bit like the Harmison slower ball to get rid of Clark at the Edgbaston in 2005. It's quite a similar moment in a way, because it did just change the dynamic. I was feeling like actually England could do this. And as I say, I still felt a bit like that on the fifth morning, but it did, it changed the way I was thinking about it. And I think it just gave Australia so much more confidence. So as a moment, it was, it was a big one.
Yeah. And there was just some great passages of play, wasn't there? And the reviews that seemed to come like every ball at one point, and they were all excruciating. It's sort of torturous stuff to watch, but it was cracking.
It was a great advert for Test cricket, wasn't it? That's what people always say. And obviously I love Test cricket, and people won't be surprised to hear me say that. But as we've seen in this game, the way that it fluctuates, and that's what's so great about Test cricket as opposed to the other formats and as opposed to most sports, the fact that it can change, it's just the ebbing and flowing, and it's that longer time frame. It's a bit like a novel. It's the reason I like novels as well. You'll appreciate this as a fellow bookworm.
Yeah, I love books.
The way that things play out, that longer narrative. I love Test cricket for the same reason I love novels. It's just hard to beat. When you get a Test match like that, it's very hard to beat.
Yeah, I mean, there were a few moments in this match. I think probably the thing that will stick with me for quite a long time, and I hope doesn't typify the whole series, but certainly it's probably the most disappointing thing I've seen so far, is Moeen's caught and bowled to Lyon, and it was a blinding catch, and obviously everyone went mental for that, and it was all over the papers in Australia. But Moeen was like walking, pretty much it came off the bat, and it was a fantastic flying catch, but he was already gone. He'd already walked off.
He was halfway to the dressing room before Lyon had even taken off.
Yeah, it's just like, that was just sad.
Because it just, it looked like his confidence just wasn't there. And actually that moment, and then Mitchell Starc taking an absolutely blinding caught and bowled a few overs later, like, obviously, can't take anything whatsoever away from Australia and from those players, but you just got the sense that, you know, everything's kind of going Australia's way. And it was sort of an inverse moment of, just to talk about 2005 again, but I'll never forget Jason Gillespie letting the ball go through his legs and go for four, I think sometime in the fourth test. And that, like, I always think about that as like the moment that I thought actually England are going to win the Ashes, because it was just, you just never used to see that. And, you know, Glenn McGrath had his hands on his hips, and it was like, it just, everything was going England's way. And then a couple of overs after that, Andrew Strauss takes an insane catch off Adam Gilchrist. And it's just like, you just got the sense this is going to happen. And in this case, it's just everything's going to hand for Australia, isn't it? And things just aren't quite going for England.
It's annoying from an England fan's perspective to see Lyon doing so well, particularly, you know, after all the nonsense in the build-up and taking the mick out of him a bit. Yeah, he's been bowling wonderful. Yeah, the run out in the first test was unbelievable.
He's been bowling wonderful.
That caught and bowled was phenomenal as well.
He hit a six.
He's got 11 wickets. I mean, he's been a big player in this series so far.
And actually, if you look at his stats, his record at Brisbane and at Adelaide over his career is much better than at any of the other three grounds that they'll play at in this series. But you would think, you know, the way he's bowling at the moment, that he's not done. And I would say he should enjoy that Perth wicket. If there is a bit more bounce in it, you know, it's often underestimated how useful bounce is for spinners. You know, I always remember Graham Swan doing really well in South Africa. The ball didn't really turn, but it just bounced unpredictably and you know, got a bit more bounce up onto the splice of the bat. And if Lyon's in this kind of form and with this kind of confidence, you wouldn't bet against him bowling well in Perth too. And this is why, so if you add him into the mix with the three quick bowlers who you'd imagine are going to enjoy Perth, it is hard to see how England win that game. So that's why I think it's very hard to see how England come back. It's very hard to see a route back for England from 2-0 down. They've never come back from 2-0 down in an Ashes series. And Australia have only done it once, and that was in the 1930s. Yeah, you do just sort of feel like losing this game. This was England's opportunity, wasn't it? Pink ball, swinging conditions. They really had to win here. And it's a shame, isn't it? I think it's a shame for Australian fans too, because as I say, you feel like the series is kind of getting going and it could be quite competitive from now on, but it's gone. You know, it's the result is pretty much been decided, and it just kind of takes the air out of things a bit, doesn't it? It's popped our Ashes balloon a little bit.
The only way England are probably coming back is if the next test's at Trent Bridge. It's unlikely.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Yeah. It feels like a long time ago now, but after the first innings, it seemed like Root's decision to bowl at the toss was going to be crucial. It would be seen as a crucial mistake, a NASA moment. Obviously, the way things played out in the second half of the game, that's been slightly forgotten about, or at least pushed to the back of people's minds. But in the final analysis, how significant was that? Was that a mistake to put Australia in?
No, I don't think it was. You know, you have to make a decision. I think both ways round it, you could have made a justification for. And I think it's one of those. It's a bold decision, obviously. You know, out of step with history. Mm. But then if it pays off, then people would have said, "Oh, you know, mastermind."
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you could argue that, you know, it was a gamble and it didn't pay off. But yeah, I don't think we should be too harsh on him for that.
Especially because, you know, he can only make the decision, and then it's up to his bowlers to back him up. And they didn't really, did they? They bowled far too short on that first morning. Frustratingly short, maddeningly short it was. I mean, the positive thing, I suppose, is that the England bowlers did seem to learn their lesson, and they bowled so much better in the second innings, real kind of chalk and cheese type stuff. And as we say, did bowl Australia out for 130. Old Chris Wokes picking up four wickets, and he was just a different bowler altogether, wasn't he? Anderson moving the ball around under the
Anderson.
Anderson. And yeah, he finished with his first five wicket haul in Australia. So, I mean, if we're scrabbling around for positives here, Tim, I suppose that could be one. The fact that the bowlers did so much better second time around. There was possibly a bit too much focus, I thought, on the five wicket thing, as though, you know, on Anderson taking five wickets, as though he'd never bowled well in Australia before. It's like, oh, this has always been his, you know, the mark against him has been his record in Australia. And it's not fantastic. His average was, I think, in the high 30s before this test. But he did have a brilliant series in 2010. And I think he took four wickets on three occasions in that series, was the leading wicket taker. You know, this idea that Anderson only bowls well in England when it swings around. He's been brilliant in India. He's been brilliant in the UAE. I don't know. I'm not sure there's as many blots on his resume as some people seem to think. And yeah, I don't know. He might. You could argue he's not going to go down as an all-time great. And I think you can make a very strong argument that he's not the best fast bowler of this era. You know, I think certainly Dale Steyn would have a much stronger case than he does. But if you think he's not a good bowler, I don't know what to say at this point. But I mean, how do you assess England's bowling attack overall? How confident are you about it after these two, as I say, kind of chalk and cheese type performances? Which version of the attack, you know, do you expect the chalk attack or the cheese attack to turn up in Perth this week?
It's been a bit, you know, again, like, you know, to come back to the start, it's just been a little bit underwhelming. You know, it's not, they haven't been bad, but they just haven't been that good.
Haven't been good.
No, exactly. They're just, I don't know, yeah, it's just been a little bit, you know, the lengths were definitely a bit short for long periods. And I don't know, you know, obviously Broad and Anderson are coming to the end of them, not even the autumn, probably the sort of early winter of their careers.
Winter is coming.
Winter is coming fast.
All too.
Anyway, but you know, there were positives. You know, Wokes improved. I liked the look of Overton.
Well, I did as well. But so he obviously got four wickets in the first innings. Had a good debut. But the problem with this attack, you know, the really glaring thing is the lack of pace, isn't it? And Overton does not do much to remedy that. You know, he was the slowest of the seamers bowling, only in the mid-70s at times. And you know, I think it can be overdone, the discussion about pace, and you don't have to be quick to take wickets, do you, as Anderson and Wokes proved. And, you know, someone like Glenn McGrath was never a quick bowler, but he's one of the best seam bowlers of all time. And as we said on the last show, you know, the genuinely quick English bowlers who people are talking about, like Mark Wood and Liam Plunkett, have obviously got much better because they're not playing. But it was a bit uninspiring in the first innings, wasn't it? And you do sort of feel, particularly on these kinds of pitches, if it isn't swinging and you've got no pace, where are the wickets coming from? And, you know, we've seen, yeah, in that first innings, the fewest number of deliveries that any of the Australian batsmen faced was 29. I think only one batsman stayed in for less than an hour. So there was no kind of, the breakthroughs were,
there's no momentum.
Yeah, they're so difficult to get those breakthroughs. And it's easy to see, I think, why, in general, the Australian tail-enders have fared so much better in this series than England's, because the prospect of facing the English quick bowlers or the Australian quick bowlers, if you're not a professional batsman, you know, it's pretty easy to decide which one you'd rather do.
Yeah, I think as well, you know, this would be pinned against, for me, the bowlers and the batsmen and the whole team as a whole. Is it's not a very intimidating England team, is it, in the whole? And it's not all about intimidation and stuff, but you know, there is a degree, you need a bit of an intimidation factor in a good team, and a good team will be inherently intimidating. And you just don't feel like England's batsmen have asserted themselves in any way, and certainly not the bowlers. There's no real focal point to either. I mean, Joe Root should be, you know, he's not been far off. And, you know, it has been disappointing again that he's not gone on from good starts and, you know, put a lot of runs on the board. But aside from him, Yeah, and that, and again, we've talked about Stokes, but Stokes would be that kind of player.
And so, yeah, I mean, I know I sound like a broken record, but you keep coming back to the fact that the squad they've picked just isn't good enough. And, you know, obviously, again, as we've said many times, there aren't people screaming out for selection. But yes, you can see that England's batsmen just haven't been up to it so far. Their top score is 302. But who do they bring in from the squad? It's Gary Balance is the only option. And what can you do? What can you do with that? I mean, maybe something they could do is change the batting order, possibly look at pushing Johnny Bairstow up a bit. I mean, you'd have to say he's probably the third best batsman in this team, and one of the two ahead of him, you know, Root and Cook, one of those. Cook seems to be out of form. Can they find a way of getting Bairstow more time in the middle? Maybe they could push him up a bit, but I don't think they will do that. So it's hard to see what changes they can or will make that will improve things.
It's really not a lot of options.
A word on Australia. We've talked about Sean Marsh. That was a tremendous innings. As we say, in the end, England's batsmen haven't been good enough, and they certainly haven't been good enough against Australia's bowlers. This Australian bowling attack is a pretty ferocious one, isn't it?
It is strong, yeah, and it's everything that England isn't really at the moment.
Quick.
Yeah, exactly, and just tasty. I think, you know, Australia have been excellent, but then, yeah, how much credit can you give a team for beating a quite average team? So I don't know, you know, they're not obviously one of the great Australian sides.
There's lots
of promise there.
As we said, there's certainly problems in the batting, isn't there? And you know, in some ways not as many as we thought, because Sean Marsh has come in and done well, but then we thought Peter Handscomb would have a good series and he looks totally hopeless, doesn't he? Just not sure what's going on with his technique. But I don't think there's much arguing with the strength of the bowling attack. And certainly on that final day, you know, we were very hopeful that England might be able to pull something off. And they didn't bat brilliantly, but it was tough. It was tough against when they're up against that kind of performance from the Australian bowlers. We talked about Lyon, but the quick bowlers, all three of them bowling over 90 miles an hour, you know, bowling very well. Stark is the leading wicket taker in the series, but I don't know if you could say he's been the best bowler, you know, the best of the three, because Pat Cummins, you know, we talk about that wicket of Milan, but just throughout the game and throughout both games has been outstanding. And Josh Hazlewood, I think, just he just goes quietly about his business, doesn't he? He's actually the highest ranked of those three in the player rankings, and quicker than people think. He was bowling over 90. And I do think in any other bowling attack, he'd be the absolute superstar, wouldn't he? But in this one, he does just take a bit of a back seat. But he's, you know, he's just a phenomenally good bowler. And, you know, people talk about him being the new McGrath. There's something in that, because he's just so consistent. So, two down, Tone, three to play. We've got a couple of days to go until the third test kicks off at the Wacker in Perth. Can you give me something here? Is there any universe in which this could still happen? Or is a whitewash on the cards?
I mean, a whitewash is definitely on the cards at this point.
It's definitely a possibility, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just... do you know what I was thinking the other day as well? You know, after England's last win at home, and it was at that sort of topsy-turvy series, and I moaned a bit. Well, it hasn't been a classic. Now I'm really regretting
that. Doesn't sound like
you, Tony. No, I know. Now I'm really regretting that. We didn't know how good we had it, did we?
Yeah.
I've really, really glossed over that. Yeah, talking about glossing over success. I really didn't make the most of that.
What wouldn't you give for a Stuart Broad 8 for 15?
It's a short list. It'd be interesting. I just hope, you know, you just hope England can stick in it and show a bit of character.
I mean, if they do find a way to win in Perth, you know, we're talking as though the series is over, and it almost certainly is. But if they do win in Perth, and if they carry on that momentum that they've built up a little bit in the back half of the Adelaide game, suddenly it's 2-1. They only need to draw to retain the Ashes. With two tests to play, you know, people will be saying this could happen. So it's not impossible. Australia lost in Perth against South Africa last year. It's not, although England haven't won there since 1978, it's not the fortress for Australia that Brisbane is. So, you know, there's rays of hope for England, but
yeah,
it's hard to see. Like, if they found it this difficult in Adelaide against this Australian bowling attack, and it's hard to see how things are going to get any easier at the Wacker.
Yeah, and, you know, and what we've just said, or I've been saying all night, is that, you know, Australia haven't been that much better than England. they've been better in every area, but not that much better in every area. We just need someone in that batting lineup for England to stand up and be counted in this next test. And that could be enough to win it. But it might not be because, yeah, obviously, you know, Australia have more than, you know, got more than enough in their tank, as we've seen so far. But, yeah, who's it going to be?
I mean, I'd love it to be Cook, but he doesn't seem to know what's going on against Nathan Lyon, does he? I don't know. Gary Balance? Actually, another reason why, you know, that optimism that I was just trying to build up there tapers off a little bit when you think about the fact that, yeah, A, Australia's bowlers are really going to enjoy this Perth wicket, but B, England have lost by 120 runs in Adelaide and Steve Smith barely made a run. You know, if he returns to the mean and puts in another performance in the third test, it's very hard to see how England are going to find enough runs to counter that.
Fun time.
not a lot to go on. Did you enjoy the day-night aspect of this game? Did you think that was a success? First day-night Ashes test, of course.
Yeah. I mean, certainly from a spectator in England's point of view, you know, the timings are really good. So that was a positive. The fourth day particularly, that was a really exciting day of cricket, and that carried right through. Mm. There is an element, I think, of the play in the evening, which is when you're going to get the most spectators at the ground, presumably, and the most spectators watching TV in the UK, specifically in terms of an Ashes series, obviously. But there's an element of the fact that when the floodlights come on, that the batsmen are just kind of trying to shut up shop and survive, so that the cricket does become a little bit more bitty than perhaps it would be if it was, you know, the final session and they're in the sunshine and, you know, could be sort of making hay while the sun shines, literally.
Yeah, but then the other way to think about that is that suddenly the bowlers are in the game.
Yeah.
Every day, you know, the bowlers are going to be in the game at some point, even on a flat pitch. So, which I think does actually make it better. It, you know, it adds another dimension to the test match. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I've definitely enjoyed it.
I'm right behind it.
But the only thing, it does just sort of backs... The pattern of play is probably more predictable in that sense.
Mm.
And I agree, watching batsmen under the cosh and the bowlers getting the best of it is often makes for very entertaining cricket than the most entertaining cricket, for sure. But I wonder whether over time that sort of pattern of play will just become a bit too predictable. Mm. It's like, oh, the lights are coming on. Oh, it's going to be... Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll work out well.
Yeah. You ran out of steam a bit there.
Yeah.
We should wrap this up, should we? My feet are freezing. I wonder if my socks have dried yet. Much like the Brexit negotiations this week, this episode of the World Cricket Show has gone extremely well. So with everything looking shipshape, and not in the least bit terrifying, this seems like a good moment to bring it to an end. Have you had fun tonight, Tone?
It's been good, yeah. Yeah, certainly feeling a little bit weary, so just, you know, push on.
Push off.
Push on. No, just got to push on now.
Oh, I see. What, push on and finish the episode as quickly as possible?
Just get it in the bag.
Looking for you to push off, to be honest. Right, we're off then. You're off for a roast, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going home for a bowl of chickpeas and bulgur wheat or something.
Bulgur wheat? Okay.
Lentils, maybe.
No cereal?
I've eaten far too much cereal in the middle of the night over the last couple of weeks. Mostly in the middle of the night.
That's impressive, though. It's impressive. Well done.
Thanks. I've certainly been impressed with myself. Well, very quickly then, just while Tony's putting his shoes on, if you enjoy the World Cricket Show, get more involved on the internet. We're on Twitter. I'm tweeting as the Ashes are going on, at Cricket Show. Like us on Facebook as well, facebook.com/cricketshow. You know, you never know. There might be the odd Facebook Live coming your way, possibly. Send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, @worldcricketshow. And if you want to support the show in a financial way, a couple of ways to do that. Christmas is coming. If you're doing your shopping on Amazon, go first of all to our website, which is cricketshow.net, and click the link through there. And if you want to make a regular donation, the best place to do that, well, the only place really to do that, is on Patreon, patreon.com/cricketshow. So yeah, that's it, I think, Tone. Have you enjoyed yourself tonight?
It's been good.
Yeah, big time. Stay in school, everyone. We'll be back next week. With a report from Perth. Well, not from Perth, though, yeah.
I thought you were going to surprise me then.
Well, people would have to do a lot of Christmas shopping through that Amazon link over the next week or so. But that will be our Christmas special as well, won't it? Will it?
Of course it will.
Yeah. So, yeah, lots to look forward to there.
Hopefully England give us a festive performance.
Mm, something to cheer.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, Tone. Thanks for having me around.
Pleasure.
I'll put my socks on. Put my wet socks on. Bye-bye for now.
Cheery. I can smell your fear. Ba-da-da-ba-ba, ba-da-da-ba-ba. Ba-da-da-ba-ba, ba-da-da-ba-ba. Ba-da-da-ba-ba, ba-da-da-ba-ba. Ba-da-da-ba-ba, ba-da-da-ba-ba.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.